The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about an effort to make it easier to upgrade many of the bay's smaller drift net vessels. We'll also get an update about the Port Moeller test fishery, and we'll get the lowdown on the slightly larger escapement goal for the Nooshigak River. All of that and more is coming up on today's edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on listener-supported public radio, KDLG. Last year, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game made public proposed new escapement goals for many of the rivers in Bristol Bay. After a controversy erupted at the Alaska Board of Fisheries Bristol Bay meeting, the department decided to hold off on instituting the new goals for 2 years while a work group examines the issue. However, at least one of the sockeye goals is going up. The board approved a proposal that increases the minimum escapement goal for sockeye to the Nooshigak River from 340,000 fish up to 370,000 fish. Jeff Regnard is the director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries. Previously, he was the regional manager in charge of Bristol Bay. He notes that the escapement goal increase is related to the sonar counting system on the Nooshigak River, which is the only river in the bay that features a sonar counter instead of the traditional counting towers.
And that has gone through a mechanical change from Bendix, the old sonar gear, to Ditson. And as we've talked a little bit about Kings and Sockeye, the Ditson counts a different, well, it's actually a different percentage of the total run. The index that it's enumerating is different, thus a need to change the goal to reflect so things are the same. And so that's why you see the changes here. And that's something that we'd want to go through. And what we can do as a staff is tell you which goals mechanically still needs to be adjusted. And, of course, the other ones would not. The tower-based sockeye goals, which is almost all of the goals in the bay, other than the Nooshigak, will remain unchanged for 2 years. At this point, I think it would be a good idea for us to consider making the mechanical change when it comes to the difference in sonar gear, just so it's very straightforward for the public, for the users, and for the department to proceed forward, because we can't go backwards because the Bendix gear doesn't exist any longer.
Last year, the escapement goal range for the Nooshigak River was between 340,000 to 760,000 sockeye. The upper end of the goal remains unchanged at 760,000, but the lower end goes up to 370,000 sockeye. Last year's sockeye escapement to the Nooshigak River was counted at 432,400 fish. The 2013 forecast from Fish and Game anticipates the total sockeye run to the Nooshigak River to come in at 1.3 million fish. And we'll have more news about the escapement goals coming up in a bit. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The sockeye fishery in the Nooshigak Commercial Fishing District is underway, but effort is limited to just the Agushik section. Last Thursday, Fish and Game announced 3 8-hour openings in the Agushik section just for the set netters. Area management biologist Tim Sands confirms that the processor that normally services the Agushik section set netters is ready to buy fish.
And so when they're ready to buy, we can open it up over there just, you know, 8 hours. It basically works as a little test fishery over there. It's set net only, so we don't feel like they can catch a big percentage of what's going by. But it gives us some information about what's going by, because there's a 5 day lag time between when the fish go by the commercial district and when they get to the tower. So that's important to get more information there. It helps us. You know, we used to have an in-river test fish project there. That project was cut in the early 2000s. So having this short commercial fishery over there helps us.
Tonight's opening will begin at 7 p.m. and run until 3 a.m. Monday morning. The final announced opening will begin Monday night at 8 and run until 4 a.m. on Tuesday. Sands does not expect participation in the openings to be large. However, he stresses that all permit holders who plan to fish in the set net opening must register with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game prior to fishing. The project account escapement to the Agushik River is slated to begin counting on June the 24th. Informational updates and the announcements for the west side districts of Nooshigak and Togiak can be heard by calling the ADF&G recorded message line at 842-5226. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on KDLG. The Port Moeller test fishery got started on Monday, and today is the seventh day of fishing. Weather resulted in no fishing efforts Saturday, but the test boat was expected to be fishing today. There was another large uptick in the catches on Friday, with 259 sockeye caught in the 200-fathom net over just four of the five stations that are normally fished. The crew of the research vessel Pandela skipped Station 10 Friday morning due to the impending weather as they fished back into Port Moeller. Friday's catch produced a daily traditional index number of 136. That pushes the cumulative index number up to 308. That far exceeds the largest cumulative index number for the fishery at this point in the run between 1990 and 2012. The average cumulative index number is 88. Lowest such number is 21 back in 1994, and the previous high through June the 14th was 191 set back in the year 2000. The test fishery is run by the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute, which is a subsidiary of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, with assistance from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Scott Rayburn is a data analyst with BBSRI. He says it's still a little early to get a clear picture of what the data from the test fishery actually means for the sockeye resource headed to Bristol Bay.
Yeah, I would like to have some more time and more data points. Generally, Port Moeller has its greatest information content between the 25th of June and from there on out. It's most useful probably between the 25th and the 30th of June. But this early in the season, it's just too soon to tell or guess at what the run magnitude will be based on Port Moeller.
Catches as part of the Port Moeller test fishery increased again on Friday. 259 sockeye were caught. That's way up from the 157 fish caught last Thursday. Once again, the high station was Station 6, where 97 sockeye were caught. 90 fish were taken at Station 4. 62 fish were caught at Station 8. Just 10 fish were caught at the inside station on Friday. And as like the last couple of years, the Port Moeller test fishery will be using a 200-fathom gill net consisting of alternating 50-fathom panels of 4.5-inch mesh and 5 1/8-inch mesh. On Friday, 131 of the sockeye were taken from the 5 and 1/8-inch mesh panels. 128 fish were taken from the 4.5-inch mesh panels. The annual Port Moeller test fishery got started last Monday and is currently scheduled to run through July the 10th. One of the products from the test fishery that many fishermen, processors, and the other stakeholders use is the index numbers that are intended to represent the sockeye resource moving through the test fishery area, which stretches from the Port Moeller area to the northwest. Once again, the traditional cumulative index number through Friday is 308. That's the highest cumulative index number from 1990 through last year. The cumulative replacement index number, which represents the actual catches in the new net, was 108, which is higher than the replacement index number recorded through this point of the season in 2011 or 2012. Rayburn says it might be a little early in the season to read too much into those high index numbers.
That said, it's, you know, better than a small index. At this point, it can mean that the run is early, that the run is large, or that the fish per index at Port Moeller is lower than average, meaning that you catch more fish at Port Moeller, but it's not going to equate to more fish inshore. So one of those three possibilities, and it's just too soon to tease them apart.
General wisdom is that the Port Moeller test fishery samples sockeye that are 5 to 8 days out from the inshore districts of the bay. Fish and Game confirms that the first genetic stock composition estimates should be released on June the 20th. They'll cover the fish caught and sampled between June the 10th and the 17th. KDLG News will be providing extensive coverage of the test fishery during our local news and in the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. And the updates from the test fishery can be found online on the website of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. That website is bbrsda.com. Once again, there was no fishing effort associated with the Port Moeller test fishery on Saturday due to weather, but the test boat was expected to be fishing today. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. It's still early in the 2013 Bristol Bay sockeye fishery, but there has been some fishing effort in the east side districts. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game confirms that nearly 85,000 sockeye were harvested in the Igigik district last week. The weekly fishing schedule for the Igigik and Ugashik districts came to an end on Friday morning at 9. From now on, all the fishing time in both districts is done via emergency order. The ADFNG area manager for the Igigik and Ugashik districts is Paul Solomon. He confirms that he'll be mirroring fishing time in the Ugashik district with what he allows in the Igigik district.
I'm going to start the season off like we did last year. I'll base everything initially on what happens in Igigik, because typically the Ugashik runs a little bit later. And if I open that district up early to any length of time, I run the risk of having a big fleet down there picking off fish that aren't local. So I'm going to go slow with that. I also don't want to have a situation where I have Igigik open one day and Ugashik open the next day and have people bouncing back between the two. You can fish where you want to, but you have to pick one.
Solomon confirms that on June 25th, which is the day that fishermen have to register for a district, he'll separate management of the two districts. In an update that was issued today, Fish and Game noted the preliminary data indicates the passage of sockeye into the Igigik River is low. The counting towers on the Igigik River are deploying today. They should be operational by Monday or Tuesday. Fish and Game confirms that the Igigik district remains closed to commercial fishing today. Fishermen in both the Igigik and Ugashik districts are asked to stand by at noon on Monday for the next possible announcement. In the emergency order that was issued today at noon, Fish and Game opened subsistence fishing in the Igigik Commercial Fishing District through noon on Monday. Fishermen should note that starting Monday, the Fish and Game office in King Salmon will begin their summer hours. Those hours are 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. 7 days a week, and the 7-day-a-week schedule will run through July the 17th. You're listening to the KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason. The organization that represents all of the DriftNet permit holders in Bristol Bay started an effort earlier this year to gauge the interest of the drifters in reducing the size of the overall fleet. Back in April, the 1,858 DriftNet permit holders were sent a questionnaire from the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association that asked a couple of questions. The results were outlined in detail during the recent annual meeting that was held in Dillingham. RSDA Executive Director Bob Waldrop confirmed that 421 drifters have thus far responded.
That's more people than actually participated and voted in the last board election. So we've tapped into a vein here.
The RSDA is still accepting the responses of permit holders who were asked to look for and respond to the mailing that they should have received back in April. The first question is, based on what you already know about permit buyback programs, do you think the buyback program is a good idea for the Bristol Bay DriftNet salmon fishery? Waldrop outlined the responses to that question.
421 people responded, and 312 of those, or about 75%, voted yes, or said yes in their opinion, that that was a good idea for us to, a buyback program seemed to be a good idea at this time.
The second question asked of all the drifters is, do you believe that the BBRSDA should investigate the options available for a buyback program, including but not limited to costs, socio and economic impacts to the entire fleet, plus a potential timeline and general feasibility?
To that question, there were 339 votes in the affirmative, or about 80% or so of it. The rest of the votes were essentially no, and there were some people that didn't answer one question or the other. So it's pretty overwhelmingly supporting, that supported that we should continue to investigate this, and in most people's minds that there's a kernel of a good idea somewhere in the buyback program. One of the things that was most interesting to me as somebody who's done quite a few of these surveys and polls before was the number of people that took the time to write in a personal opinion on the page. You remember there were several lines there available for just an open-ended question. And I bet 60 or 70% of people took the time to write in their own personal thoughts on that. I have done no evaluation or assessment of those, trying to categorize them one way or the other, but I have kept all those cards, and the board will, at some point, maybe I'll go through and mine what information is available in those individual comments. But this seems to be an interest of some robust value to those members and to this association.
Waldrop reported that at a future board meeting in the fall, he'll put forward a work plan for how the association can proceed on the issue. The effort to look at reducing the size of the DriftNet fleet in Bristol Bay is in part due to a decision made by the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission back in 2005. CFEC adopted an optimum number range of 900 to 1,400 permits. Currently, there are 1,858 DriftNet permits in Bristol Bay. Thanks to a $40,000 grant from the BBRSDA, B&C Fiberglass at the PAEF Boatyard in Dillingham has developed a mold to put flush decks on Rawson and Wegley 32-foot vessels. B&C just finished installing a flush deck on their first A-model Wegley, the fishing vessel Carol Jean, and they've done three Rawsons thus far. The upgrade isn't necessarily cheap, but it does qualify for BBEDC's Vessel Improvement Grant Program. KDLG's Dave Binegar has more.
Back in 2008, BBRSDA offered Bill Henderson at B&C Fiberglass a grant to develop a flush deck mold for some of the older boats in the fleet.
BBRSDA funded a grant to build plugs and molds. To put a flush deck into Rawson's, they wanted the Rawson owners to know that their boats were capable of being upgraded to meet the new quality standards that they were trying to get. So they funded the project. We built the molds. We made parts. We brought them up. We've installed them so far in three Rawsons. This is the first Wegley, the Carol Jean, that we've tried to install them in, and it worked fine. It fits Wegleys and Rawsons nicely.
The flush decks have a number of advantages, including just for the comfort of the crew.
Initially, the flush deck started being put in, at least I was of the opinion this was why, because it was easier on the crew. It didn't require so much work. So they weren't getting worn out as quickly.
And now, with added emphasis on raising the quality of the delivered product, flush decks have an advantage for simply cutting down on the movement of the fish.
They don't get handled as much, getting them into the fish holds. In our particular mold case, we have nicely rounded, gel-coated, molded corners, so as the fish do slide across the deck, they're not sliding over hard edges and scraping the scales off and that sort of thing. So there's an advantage there to a molded surface versus a one-off custom laminate surface, which is what we've always done until now.
It took B&C about a week and a half to finish installation on the Carol Jean. After the owners had gutted the old deck and holds themselves, the new one comes with 10 fish holds,
which are all smaller in size, and that's what the fish companies are after these days. Still will pack around 9,000 or 10,000 pounds under the lids, but it's a nice, tidy little fish hold setup.
Henderson says B&C's flush decks can accommodate some RSW upgrades, and the bulkheads beneath the deck are built to add insulation.
We use Canaccord lightweight honeycomb panels, which have a 3 times the R-value of a 3/4-inch sheet of plywood. So you're getting quite a bit of R-value in your fish hold with this installation. The only thing left at that point to insulate would be the hull side and hull bottom in the fish bins. Everything else is already insulated automatically with our system.
So far, BBRSDA seems satisfied with their public-private partnership, which has developed a convenient and cost-effective way for some of the smaller boats in the fleet to make a nice upgrade.
That was our RSDA's goal when they started, was to try to demonstrate to the Rawson and small Wegley, small boats in general, owners that their boats were upgradable. They didn't have to buy a new boat, and they weren't going to get left behind.
And there's up to $20,000 on the table to make upgrades like this under BBEDC's Vessel Improvement Grant Program. Henderson says the A-model Wegley they just finished refitting cost about $35,000, but he's going to sell kits for the do-it-yourselfers that should come in under $20,000, meaning with a little elbow grease, Wegley and Rawson owners could probably get into a new flush deck for free. For the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, I'm Dave Benninger.
The Bristol Bay sockeye fishery is a massive endeavor that features thousands of vessels that hit the water all within a few weeks. In an effort to prevent some safety problems, the U.S. Coast Guard is committed to providing free preseason safety inspections. Safety inspectors arrived in the Bristol Bay region on Monday. They've spread out to the hub communities of Dillingham, Naknek, and King Salmon to conduct free preseason vessel inspections. Inspectors are also in the Igigik area. Sarah Francis is a spokesperson for the U.S. Coast Guard.
These free exams give fishermen an opportunity to find and address safety issues that might be present before they get underway to ensure their safety at sea. We won't issue any fines or penalties for problems that are discovered at the dock. However, if you're boarded at sea and those problems are discovered, you may be asked to return to port and fix them before you can continue fishing. And that costs everybody time and money, and nobody wants that. So our goal is to keep fishermen safe and help them to not only be safe, but go forth and do what they need to do. Each vessel that passes a dockside exam earns a decal, and fishermen operating with recently issued decals benefit by being prepared to meet the Coast Guard or Alaska State Trooper law enforcement boarding requirements. That inspection, should they be boarded at sea, should go much faster than the initial one, because we'll see that they've already had one of these inspections recently, and everything should be in order.
The Coast Guard safety inspectors are expected to be in the Bristol Bay region through about June 20th. There are a number of ways to get in touch with the Coast Guard to schedule an appointment or to let them know you're ready to have your vessel inspected. You can call Coast Guard Sector Anchorage, the number is 907-538-4103, to get your name on the list, or you can speak directly with the inspectors that will be moving around the boatyards, harbors, and processing facilities across the region. If your boat's in an established boatyard, you can also signal to the Coast Guard inspectors that the vessel's ready to be inspected by putting a life ring up in the mast where it can be seen by the roving inspectors. In Dillingham, a list of vessels ready for inspection is being kept at the Dillingham Harbor Master's office. The effort to conduct preseason inspections is different than the Coast Guard's enforcement efforts that will take place during the actual fishing openings. As like previous years, the Coast Guard will be working in conjunction with the state troopers and their enforcement officers, will be riding with the troopers and using their vessels. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 800-816-3741, or on the web at AIFMA.org.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. An effort to train people for jobs in the seafood processing industry will get started this fall in the Bristol Bay region. The Bristol Bay Jobs Accelerator Project is a partnership between the Bristol Bay Native Association and the Southwest Alaska Vocational and Education Center in King Salmon. Adelheid Herman is the Instructional Operations Manager for SAVIC. She confirms that many of the details of the new program have not yet been finalized.
We're kind of, scouting what kind of classes we're going to have. We're going to look at how we can keep fishermen in business. You know, it might be, six-pack licenses or able-bodied seaman license, some of those small things. And there's a program that's called Train the Trainer program with the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association. So in order for the Bristol Bay residents to comply with the Coast Guard regulations, we need more people that can do the drill conductor training. So that might be a portion of it.
Last summer, BBNA received a $405,000 grant from the federal government to fund the Bristol Bay Jobs Accelerator Project. First series of classes through the project is expected to run from September through December. The effort to expand the ability of area residents to participate in the seafood industry is a high priority of the Bristol Bay Native Association, which is a consortium of the 31 Alaska Native tribes from the Bristol Bay region. Patty Hyano is the director of the Program Development Department. She says the new Jobs Accelerator Project fits well within the Bristol Bay vision that was developed by entities across the region back in 2011.
One of the big things about the results of that was, development in renewable resources. And so this fits right in with that. People want jobs. This fits with that, so it works very well with the visioning project.
The Bristol Bay Jobs Accelerator Project is intended to build the capacity to train local residents for jobs in the commercial fishing industry, the seafood processing industry, and related industries. Adelheid Herman says the project is a good fit for the Bristol Bay region, which boasts one of the largest commercial salmon fisheries on Earth.
I think the timing is right now because of, you know, all what's going on as far as people becoming aware of what's going on in Bristol Bay, the stories behind the fishermen. So I think the timing is just right for us to start doing this kind of program, even though it could have been done a long time ago. And the other thing is, you know, we just can't build it and they will come. We've got to kind of grow that clientele that's going to, you know, get into these programs. And we can do that in a user-friendly way. You know, it's not always like scary to take some kind of training or education, but it'll be more user-friendly.
Herman confirms that the program will include a specific focus on the needs of smaller mom-and-pop processors in Bristol Bay who often lack the resources to effectively market their products. Besides BBNA and SAVEC, the Bristol Bay Jobs Accelerator Project is being supported by the Bristol Bay Native Corporation, the UAF Bristol Bay Campus, and the Marine Advisory Program. If you're interested in the program or you want additional information, you can contact the Southwest Alaska Vocational Education Center in King Salmon. Their number is 246-4600. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The over 1,800 Bristol Bay DriftNet permit holders were invited to Dillingham on June the 8th for the annual meeting of the organization that helps market and promote Bristol Bay's world-famous sockeye salmon. The Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association was created back in 2006 when the Drifters approved a 1% assessment to fund the work of the RSDA. Each summer, the organization holds an annual meeting either in Dillingham or Naknek. This year's meeting was held in the gym of the Dillingham Elementary School. In order to make the annual meeting a meeting at which business can be done, there needs to be a quorum of the members equal to about 10%. That's about 185 permit holders. Perhaps as many as 30 permit holders showed up, which resulted in the meeting being an informational meeting only. One of the main missions of the RSDA is to fund projects that will help market or improve the fishery. This year, they're funding 12 projects to the tune of over $500,000. Fritz Johnson from Dillingham sits on the organization's board of directors, and he stressed that the RSDA works to make sure the funded projects mesh with the strategic plan.
The primary focus of the RSDA is to improve the economic well-being of the fishermen members and produce a sustainable fishery for Bristol Bay and the highest quality salmon products that we can do. The number one strategy for achieving that is to improve quality and value. Since the RSDA's beginning, the focus on chilling and quality handling has been primary, foremost. And we continue to encourage chilling. We monitor advances in chilling and how, you know, over the years, the percentage of fish coming out of the bay are chilled. And that last year, for the first time, that exceeded 50%. More than 50% of the pack was chilled at the point of harvest.
This year, the BBRSDA is funding two projects related to the goal of chilling fish at the point of harvest. Ocean Beauty Seafoods is scheduled to get upwards of $50,000 to run the ice barge Bristol Lady, and Trident Seafoods is also getting upwards of $50,000 to run the ice barge Bristol Maid. Johnson stressed that the level of funding from the RSDA is tied to the amount of ice actually produced and sold from those ice barges.
Those barges have yet to be sustainable. We're hoping they will be, and the more ice that's sold, the more likelihood they're that they will achieve sustainability, and maybe one day this subsidy won't be necessary. But in as much as, you know, promoting chilling is our number one goal, promoting chilling in fish quality in our strategic plan, we continue to feel that this is important work.
The two ice barges are actually owned by the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, and they'll be stationed this season, like last season, in the Nooshigak and Naknek-Wejek districts. Second priority included in the BBRSDA strategic plan is to fund research projects with a third priority of marketing the bay's sockeye. Johnson announced that the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust is slated to get $30,000 to conduct some studies in the headwaters of the Nooshigak and Kwajalleah Rivers.
Trying to find out if things like climate change or the impacts of other activities are affecting the life in the water, you know, and the chemistry and in the whole ecosystem, to see what's happening in the streams, and if that is changes over time, if that changes over time, and what effect that may have on salmon abundance.
Another project that will receive RSDA funding is some market analysis that will be conducted by the McDowell Group. Johnson confirms they will look at the salmon markets and the distribution channels.
Where do our fish end up? In what product forms? And to assess geographic markets for salmon and trends that are going to affect the pace and price, pace of sale and the price paid for fish.
The new market analysis is expected to cost around $64,000 a year. The McDowell Group is expected to produce two reports a year that will be presented to the RSDA Board of Directors in the late fall and the late spring. Several of the projects funded by the RSDA occur every year, but there are some brand new projects on the list, including a project to assess the sockeye resource in Illiamna Lake. The RSDA board approved $95,000 in funding for this year that will go to the University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute. Johnson noted that the project is expected to run over the next 2 years.
In voting to approve this project, it was pointed out to us that nobody has really looked at Lake Illiamna and the spawning systems there for many, many years, from back as late as the 1960s. So we know that the Quijack and that watershed has been often the mother lode of Bristol Bay, and to not know what's going on in those systems, we ought not proceed that way. We ought to know the health of those systems and what potential there is there.
The University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute is also slated to get $56,000 to look at the economic consequences of changing the sockeye escapement goals in Bristol Bay. Johnson observed that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game had wanted to implement the new goals this season.
There was a decision made that that would not take place right away until there had been a more formal study on how changing escapement goals would, in fact, affect productivity and economic impacts of raising those escapement goals. So that project is that's another one on the agenda there.
Instead of implementing the new escapement goals, ADF&G decided to hold off until a special subcommittee has a chance to investigate the impacts of the new goals. In information presented to the BBRSDA membership, the RSDA asserts that the project will not include specific escapement goal recommendations. Instead, the project will include an evaluation of a range of consequences of alternate escapement goals that can be used by Fish and Game and the Alaska Board of Fisheries when they take up the issue in future years. The executive director of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association is Bob Waldrop. He stressed that the Fisheries Research Institute project will be done in conjunction with the work of the special subcommittee created by the Alaska Board of Fisheries.
The Board of Fish appointed a working group. That working group itself has not decided what its work plan is. We're ready to contribute to it, but we're not going to be outside people advising them. We want to help fund something that they are actually need and want and will use.
The final project outlined during Saturday's BBRSDA annual meeting was the $25,000 being given to this radio station to help expand our commercial fisheries coverage during the summer. That includes producing this program, the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. One of the main focuses of the RSDA for the last couple of years has been to lobby for protections for Bristol Bay from the potential negative impacts of large-scale mining projects like the proposed Pebble Mine. The annual meeting featured an update on those efforts from RSDA board member Catherine Karskallen from Dillingham.
The overall strategy, like you know, is in line with the local Bristol Bay tribes who put in the request to the federal government, to the Environmental Protection Agency 3 years ago now, to take an action on Pebble and give us a proactive decision on the main permit that Pebble would need. So we're still in that effort. We're still on a pretty good path.
What Karskallen was referring to was the effort by several local tribes, Trout Unlimited and other organizations, to get the EPA to use its authority to stop the issuance of dredge and fill permits the Pebble Limited Partnership would need to develop the Pebble Mine. The Corps of Engineers are in charge of those permits, which are called 404 permits, thanks to the section of the Clean Water Act that governs the permits. Within that section is language that basically gives the EPA the veto of the issuance of those permits. Instead of starting a 404C process, as it's called, the EPA instead put together the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment. Public comment on that version, on the latest version of the assessment, is currently open through the end of the month, and Karskellen confirmed that the RSDA and other proponents of the EPA using its 404C veto authority will be trying to get more fishermen to comment in the coming days.
You'll see down at the harbor, that harbor booth, that van that we've got painted up and decorated is going to be up and running over the next 3 weeks or so, and we'll have comment cards there where people can go down and get comments in, and that's probably the best thing you can spread the word about and let your crew know and let everyone know. If anyone didn't get a chance to comment in the first round, the comment period has been extended, so go down there, fill out a comment card. It's the best, quickest, easy way to get your voice in, and so we're hoping at the end of this comment period they won't extend it again. We'll probably see the watershed assessment wrapped up by this fall, and that's the point where the EPA could make a decision on this permit and could come up with some sort of a proactive protection or decision on Pebble, basically. And so we'll be working on that a lot in the fall and really pushing for a decision, hopefully sometime next year.
You can find additional details about the BBRSDA's fight to stop development of large mining projects in the Bristol Bay region on the association's website at bbrsda.com. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is planning to change the sockeye escapement goals in Bristol Bay. However, that won't happen for a couple of years. A deal reached at the December Board of Fish meeting resulted in the department holding off for 2 years while a committee works with the commercial fishing industry stakeholders to address their concerns. However, the department feels justified that the goals actually need to be changed based on some new data. The Alaska Board of Fisheries received a detailed presentation on their proposed new escapement goals on the first day of the December meeting that was held in Naknek. Lowell Fair is the regional fisheries coordinator for the Alaska Division of Commercial Fisheries. He stressed that making adjustments to the escapement goals is a normal function based on new data, techniques, and information.
Changing the escapement goals is part of the normal and beneficial process that the Sustainable Salmon Policy envisioned when it asked for periodic stock-by-stock reviews and evaluation of escapement goals. How they change depends on the information content of the data that we have at the time and how this impacts development of the production model.
In February of 2012, an interdivisional salmon escapement goal committee was formed, and that committee reviewed all of the new data, including the updated brood tables. The committee then signed off on the recommended changes to escapement goals across the Bristol Bay region. For instance, the department is proposing to change the escapement goal range for the Wood River from 700,000 to 1.5 million sockeye up to a range of 800,000 to 1.8 million. Fair noted that the department is using an incremental approach, which is why the goal is not proposed to go up to 1.1 to 2.1 million sockeye, as the new production model would suggest to achieve the maximum sustained yield. The proposed change for the Nooshigak River is from a range of 370 to 760,000 sockeye up to a range of 400,000 to 900,000 fish. The proposed change for the Igigik River is from a range of 800,000 to 1.4 million to a range of 900,000 to 2 million. And the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has been looking at making the changes to the Bristol Bay escapement goals since 2003. But as Jeff Regnart reported, the department never moved forward with an official recommendation. Regnart is the director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries.
You saw us sit back in 03, as Board Member Webster pointed out, because we knew we were going to bring GSI into the world of salmon assessment. And with that GSI work, we knew things might change, and so we wanted to be cautious. And so the decision was made in 03 to not go forward with a change in the goals. That work has come and gone now, and we have the results. And so we have total runs now built on GSI, and that was able to be taken into consideration for this review. And so with that, and being able to take a look at, you know, the results of this last year, you see what you have in front of you. And we feel it's a good approach to Bristol Bay management. There are some changes, and I think that's why we're talking about them, because there are some changes to the industry.
The idea of increasing the escapement goals prompted an effort by the Board of Fish to put in place optimum escapement goals that would mirror the current escapement goals. However, that was not necessary once the deal was worked out to delay implementation of the new escapement goals until the 2015 season, while a committee of stakeholders works on the issue in the meantime. That concludes today's edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report right here on KDLG Public Radio.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA. We're on board with you.